We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
This hour is brought to you by Vasectomy Clinics of Chicago.
Going 11 days and then having a 35-pitch first inning and then getting pulled and not pitching for another 4 days or 5 days, you know, is a tough way to go. So I do think it's important for guys to be able to work through some of those things, even, you know, when it doesn't go well, just to be able to try to iron out the things that aren't right instead of, you know, waiting 5 days to do that again. Relievers have the advantage in that is that you can go out and have a bad outing and be in there the next day. And starters are, you know, obviously a little bit different routine wise, but yeah, I think in a big spot there in the first, if we had gotten all the way down to our pitcher spot also, kind of like they did in the first, which was we, you know, put up some runs early, that there's a chance we might hit for him and make that decision based on the game and then just kind of roll. But I think for his development and just the continuing to get the work in that he needs, I thought it was a good job by him to kind of settle down and at least go out there and, you know, get us through the fourth.
It's Bernstein and Rahimi, middays, 9 a.m. to noon on Chicago's Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Cubs pitching coach Tommy Hottovy on earlier with Mully and Haw explaining why Kyle Hendricks stayed in the game yesterday. I don't think he needs that. I don't think he needs some sort of reaffirmation and needs to feel good about himself. I think he was bad. He knows he was bad. And if you want to take him out, take him out. Much like Lucas Giolito right now in Boston has already given way to Zach Birdie to start the second. Odd things seem to be afoot because it looked to me, and we're watching sort of out of one eye here, but from what I was watching and what I went back and looked on the MLB app, I think they've got his pitches.
It would indicate that might be the case. Red Sox have surprised everybody so far this season, by the way. I mean, they're up to like number three in a lot of the power rankings. But do you really think that they would do something after they got popped and they just brought back Cora? Do you really think that's the case?
I'm not saying they have him illegal. I'm not saying that they're using cameras and machine learning to and then banging on garbage cans. I'm just saying it looked to me like they knew what was coming.
It looks like he was tipping something. And also, Lucas Giolito started the second inning for reasons I can't quite understand, because he threw 40 pitches in the first, I think over 40 pitches. What on earth are you doing bringing him back out there for the second inning? Like, this is the stuff that really bothers me.
Because he was late to get somebody warming.
From a philosophy standpoint, when you have a pitcher who throws that many pitches in an inning, that's the stuff that fries arms. That's the stuff that, like, hurts people when you leave him in there that long. Let's see how many pitches Giolito threw. 54. And I believe after the first inning, he was over 40. Or he was right at 40. This is not okay.
Yeah, you got to communicate. What did we talk about last
week? David Ross had Alec Mills warming in the pen in the first inning because he knew better. I think it was at the 29-pitch mark that we got that information from Matt Vasgersian. This is not okay. You don't have somebody not warming in the pen at like 30 pitches.
9 hits already.
This is, oh.
The Red Sox have 9 hits. 9 times.
Barris has been absent 9 times.
9 times. Although I always feel kind of skeezy about that because of Jeffrey Jones. I know we all love Ferris Bueller and that character and all that, but Jeffrey Jones had a little child molestation problem and kind of derailed the old career. And it's, you know, it's like, ugh.
He was playing a character in a movie.
I understand that. It's still creepy. But I wanted to read you this, And this has been making the rounds because Fangraphs can pat itself on the back right here. This is a scouting report from 2 years ago on Yermin Mercedes. Check this out. I'm just going to present this in its entirety here. It's not long.
Go on.
Yermin Mercedes, designated hitter, says signed July 2nd for the Dominican Republic off of Washington. Age 27.2, height 5'11", weight 225.
Easy tiger.
In sixth grade.
I'm not at my listed weight either on my driver's license, just saying.
Bats right, throws right. They have him graded out on the 20 to 80 scale. His hit tool, they do present and future as a slash. His hit, 60-60. Raw power, 60-60. Game power, 50-50. Run, 30-30. Fielding, 30-30. And throw, 55-55. And the reason why those numbers are the same is that you're talking at the time about a 27-year-old. They usually vary widely for an 18-year-old, 20-year-old, etc. Here's the scout. I believe Mercedes will one day be a Chicago sports cult hero.
What?
He's highly entertaining and talented enough to play a relevant big league role despite being a total defensive misfit. Stout and beefy, Mercedes is built such that he looks ripped and fat at the same time. He has a needlessly noisy punk rock swing until he has two strikes, which I'll get to, with a big leg kick and all kinds of pre-swing bat waggling. But it always pauses with Mercedes balanced, his hands in good position, ready to unload on the baseball, which he often does. Mercedes ditches the leg kick with two strikes, but he's so strong that he puts balls in play hard without it. His route to the precipice of the big leagues has been scenic. After 3 years with Washington, Mercedes was cut and spent 2014 in Indy ball, including time in the Pecos League with the White Sands Pupfish. Baltimore signed him and had him for 2 years before losing him to Chicago in the 2017 Minor League Rule 5 draft. Mercedes has now hit his way up the ladder. A 302, 366, 491 career line, including those mediocre years with Washington that brought about his release, and has big league offensive ability he just cannot catch. While he presents strikes to umpires well on occasion, he'll also just totally whiff sometimes and is constantly running to the backstop.
It just sounds like him.
Craig Littleman, a former co-worker of mine who played for White Sands with Mercedes in 2014, told me even that team was trying to hide him on defense. He also
White Sox!
White Sands Pupfish trying to hide him. He also said Mercedes was by far the team's smartest, most talented hitter. I'm not anticipating Mercedes will be able to catch every day once automated strike zones come about, but I do think it gives him a better chance to do so once in a while, and that he'll hit enough as a DH first baseman to play a part-time role anyway. Plus, he has real value as a trade chip if a universal DH is ever instituted. He is a good, relevant hitting prospect despite his age.
Wow.
How about that?
Thank you, bro.
You're welcome. The first line, I believe Mercedes will one day be a Chicago sports cult hero.
It's true. And his hands are really fabulous. When it comes to how he hits really good pitches.
And that point of balance with major league hitters, ignore the before stuff, ignore some of the leg kicks. And we had Joe Maddon on one time. We were talking about this, and I mentioned that it might have been Justin Stone himself that did this. That I saw this at a youth clinic, and they had all the kids, all the little kids were doing all their impersonating the big leaguers. And the coach made this point, and he said, "I want you to look at all these big league swings." And they showed everybody, and they said, "Well, somebody's got the bat here, and one pointed this way, one pointed that way, and one's got a big leg kick, and one is doing the poo holes." And he said, "Notice where they are at load."
Precisely.
Identical. No matter what's going on before, no matter how you finish through, that when that front foot lands and those hands come back, they are ready to rock and roll. And you watch your mean and just try to filter out everything else. But at that moment, that foot comes down, he's ready.
But you know, sit him against Shane Bieber when he was leading his respective teammates by 6 hits each.
You think Stoney is passive-aggressive? You're giving him a run for his money.
Oh, no, I'm just aggressive-aggressive. There's a difference.
Yeah, because the way it's delivered, though, has a little bit more venom to it. Because you're building a really passionate. How should I look at it? You're curating some distaste here.
I'm building a case.
Yeah.
I'm getting receipts. April 10th, Jake Mintz of Cespedes Family Barbecue, who I always enjoy reading for Fox Sports, did a wonderful piece on your main Mercedes. And the quote from his Dominican Winter League general manager, CJ Lugo, he actually thinks he's Johnny Bench.
Good.
But that's also part of what makes him such a good hitter. And they went on to talk about his circuitous path, as you mentioned. And I did giggle when you said White Sands because I immediately thought of the White Sox and their defense. Talked about the Pecos League as well. And then also just his interpretation of him and goofing off. And I think this is really relevant for a lot of people. And this is where perhaps, as we like to say, representation really matters for the Sox. Mike DeLong, a pitcher for the Pupfish, urged the manager to take the kid on, and so they did. DeLong became Mercedes' roommate. 5 years his senior, did his best to help the young player. He said he was misunderstood. His English wasn't great, so a lot got lost in translation. But if you spoke Spanish, you knew he was just being a goofball. He was one of the funniest guys I played with. You knew he was different right away. The way his hands and his feet worked were just different. No one could get him out. That's a pretty big piece of information that could have caused him to get overlooked.
Just lost in translation.
Yeah. And then Lugo said, we saw a young Dominican catcher who had consistently hit above 300. Why isn't anyone else on this guy?
How many guys are out there in independent ball that are languishing for similar reasons? You know, weird body, no defensive position. People don't really get his personality. Takes time to break through.
I think we all tend to fall in love with certain typical sports cliches, right? Like Mac Brown always says you can't coach height. So we all fall in love with that, but it's knowing your metrics on a guy and your eye tests are good enough when you see what you see and being able to separate that. And thusly, having a good enough team around him to where you can take a risk on that guy and bring him into your system because you don't need to say make or break yourself with one draft and have every pick be crucial.
Because you have a stronger floor already built in and you're not chasing.
Kind of like the Denver Nuggets with AK.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You kind of see where I'm going here. So the White Sox, because they had a strong farm system, because they have all these opportunities for people, were able to bring in your main Mercedes, and now they get to highlight him. And maybe, just maybe, he'll face Shane Bieber next time.
Who is doing historic stuff. If you start looking at he is walking with some pitching gods when it comes to strikeouts to start a season.
All I ask is that if we're going to have the best of the best face off against each other again in Giolito and Bieber, give me the best of the best of your lineups.
I don't think that should be too much to ask. You have one job as a manager, and Jerry Nairn's going to write up that card for you. You don't even have to do that.
And have a dude against one of the best teams in baseball start warming at, say, 28, 29 pitches in the first.
Not waiting until 35. Yep, we saw it last night. We saw when Rossi did it, and now we're seeing when La Russa is doing it and not doing it. We are going to talk about the Cubs next because Patrick Mooney of The Athletic will let us know what that was last night, why it was, and how they can make sure it doesn't happen again. All that and more Cubs talk straight ahead on The Score.
Your mean Mercedes. He is your mean. He's all of our mean.
Where did your mean go?
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
I thought he settled down nicely. You know, it could be rust, a little bit, the extra time off. You know, it looked like he just wasn't executing. The ball looked up. You know, his misses were more belt line than normal. Looked like the ball was running back to the middle, kind of flat, not the bite that I think we're used to. Tough time with command. Just looked like he was out of sync in that first inning, just not executing like we're used to seeing him execute.
I always a matter of rust not being able to play in the last few days.
You know, no, I don't think so. It was just, obviously just not very good overall from the start. Not aggressive, falling behind guys, and then just everything was flat. You know, I was able to make a little bit of an adjustment, but no, I can't attribute it really to any of that. It's just got to get back to work. Got a lot to work on going forward.
There's a lot of words and descriptions to say bad. It was just bad pitching is what it was. You heard Kyle Hendricks. You heard David Ross. And we'll find out how alarming it was with our next guest, Patrick Mooney. He is on Twitter at PJ_Mooney, the Cubs reporter for The Athletic. Joins us on the Alpamonte Nissan hotline, Alpamonte Nissan on North Avenue in Melrose Park or at apnissan.com. So, Patrick, hello. That's the question. How alarmed are you by that unexpectedly bad performance by their purported ace?
I think in the long run, Kyle Hendricks will be just fine. I think the Cubs are telling us to kind of be patient and take a step back. And I think the most alarming part is when you do that, it actually looks a lot worse. I mean, what do you expect when you struggle to regenerate your farm system after winning the World Series, after you trade a pitcher like Yu Darvish, and after you slash your budget for baseball operations? I think the Cubs probably had some potential best case scenarios, you know, built into the season. If, you know, everything went right, and maybe they could surprise and hang in there. But to this point, they really haven't shown us anything in terms of something you can hang your hat on from one game to the next. And we saw that this weekend with back-to-back 13-4 games.
Yeah, that's a sobering and very Mooney way of putting it. It's always good to see you. And when I think about the Cubs' problem, and we talk about this all the time, the idea that they're going to find the back of their baseball card. But inconsistency is a mark of a team that isn't very good. And we're seeing a lot of inconsistency out of the individual pieces that make up what is supposed to be a much better performance on the field.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's reasonable to expect the offense will be better because it had been, like, you know, at historically worse levels, like 2 weeks into the season. I'm more just kind of curious, and it's something we're looking at, you know, writing on The Athletic today, of just like, what if this is the year where the pitching just collapses and the Cubs have been able to maneuver around, say, injuries to Yu Darvish or, you know, their lack of homegrown pitching. They've been able to kind of reinvest at the trade deadline, which no one really expects them to do this year. So, you know, if we all saw, you know, how bad it can look when, you know, your starting pitchers don't give you a chance. And there's been just way too many of these non-competitive games. And, you know, certainly Kyle Hendricks has a great track record. Zach Davies has a very strong track record, even though he's not Yu Darvish. Jake Arrieta, there is probably something still in there. They like Trevor Williams. Albert Alzule has shown certainly flashes, but like in terms of 1 through 5 on a consistent night in, night out basis that, you know, you can build winning streaks and create a sense of momentum, the Cubs haven't shown that yet.
How much did COVID issues and are COVID issues in general still affecting this team? And if it's not directly affecting them, you know, hearing Jed Hoyer say what he said about, you know, going through test results is not exactly the numbers I want to be looking at right now, but just in general affecting their concentration, the overall heat loss, the just amount of time it is a concern. What, how do you measure what that's done to them?
I think this year is probably, you know, sigh of relief compared to last year, which was just kind of, in listening to David Ross, just a stress test from really the moment they regathered at Wrigley Field for training camp. There has been, I think having fans back in the stands certainly helps players on these Zoom conferences, you know, talk about how things are somewhat normal in the clubhouse, certainly not an ideal situation. But I think more in terms of, you know, COVID impact, it would be kind of what this team has done in terms of how they've allocated resources for this season, how they've kind of built the team out. And, you know, I think they've appeared to have contained, you know, a full-blown COVID outbreak after two coaches tested positive. And I don't think that's a sign, as Jed Hoyer said, that they were like any less disciplined this year as opposed to last year. It's just, it's a really hard thing to contain, and you see it throughout baseball of, you know, kind of what's happened with the Twins, what happened with the Nationals. I mean, there's going to be more of this. It's going to be kind of a rolling basis until, as a country, we get past this.
I look to you as one of the voices of reason when it comes to perspective, especially when it comes to the Cubs. And we've talked a lot about how important April, May were going to be because of where this team was going to stand at the trade deadline. Given what we've seen so far, are you ready to make an assessment as to how the Cubs are going to move forward as far as the long-term direction is concerned vis-a-vis that trade deadline?
Well, I think they've already committed to the long-term direction. I mean, you saw it with the Darvish trade, the fact that this group, by and large, hasn't signed contract extensions. Some of it was, you know, guys naturally moving on or the choices they made in free agency. And around baseball teams in April and May don't really talk trades. I think this group will have a chance to turn things around. I mean, there is a lot of baseball left between now and July 30th. It's just hard because a 6-9 record just feels a lot worse because we've been talking about these issues for years. And because they have cut some corners here in building this year's team. So the schedule does not get exponentially easier. In fact, they probably couldn't have asked for an easier schedule to start the season or better health coming out of spring training. So, yes, there is time, but they're going to have to turn it around here sooner rather than later. And, you know, if this continues, it's not going to be a hard decision for Jed. I mean, the games, the players, the performances will tell us, you know, what they're going to do. And at that point, it's just a matter of, you know, lining up players with teams and assessing other teams' farm systems and making the money work.
I've looked at everything through that perspective of money now. And although we've focused on their own players and guys about to be paid when it comes to trade chips, whether it's Baez, Contreras, Bryant, et cetera, if Kimbrel keeps throwing like this, that's the guy you're motivated to move. I mean, because then it's a useless hood ornament on a rebuilder, and you're out from under some really significant money to which you've already committed. So I would think that they'd be pretty aggressive in trying to sell him to a contender if he's going to keep pitching like this.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, every summer we talk about this, Dan, of, you know, every contender wants bullpen help. They need more pitching depth. And while no one will be as desperate or as aggressive as Theo Epstein was in 2016. I'm not sure they're getting another Gleyber Torres or Jorge Soler, you know, the guy that gave up to get Wade Davis to defend their World Series title. Certainly, if he's pitching like this, there's going to be real demand for his services, and with good reason. I mean, this is not a guy who the Cubs kind of lucked into here. I mean, this is a borderline Hall of Fame closer who's done it for a long time at the highest level and has really, if you look at his numbers, if you look at his results, if you kind of look at his track record, I mean, there's a lot to compel a team to make that big deal and maybe jump the market. And that's why, you know, it felt like it's never too early with his team to start asking these questions, because you know this is how players, coaches, front office is processing this on a day-to-day basis. You can't treat it like the NFL, but you also can't just say, you know, hey, things will automatically get better on their own, or that they're going to have a full season to find their normal levels.
We have seen improvement out of Chris Bryant and Wilson Contreras. What have you seen out of them to get to the points they're at? And do you think Wilson's anger did help motivate him to start swinging away at the plate a little bit more?
Well, I think Chris Bryant and talking to him in spring training, actually being able to see him in person and not on a Zoom screen, was refreshing. And I thought it was revealing, and that he seemed to be in a really good place mentally. He was ready for the season. He was healthy. And whenever he's been healthy, he's performed at a really elite level, if not a superstar level. And so I think that's a great sign for the Cubs. And unfortunately, if you're a Cubs fan who has like a Chris Bryant jersey, at this point, it looks like he'll be wearing a different uniform by August. But between him, Contreras, you saw Rizzo over the weekend, Javi will always have these kind of flashes. Jock Peterson probably couldn't have had a worse start. He's going to get better. Like, they need this offense to start clicking and just give their pitching room some breathing room to kind of give them this runway to kind of figure out what they do have and whether they can surprise some people and make it a harder decision on Jed Hoyer if they could be hanging around the division race in the wild card picture to where, you know, we're all having good, lively debates about what the Cubs should do and not just the Cubs telling us, yeah, tear it down, time to start over.
Seems like forever ago that we were talking about Jock Peterson just tearing things up in spring. I mean, just everything was barreled up, talking exit velocities and all of it.
Yeah.
And now, my God, it's just, I mean, I know we can talk BABIP for a lot of these guys, but that slash line of 149, 281, 255, and the war of negative 0.3 per Fangraphs doesn't lie. As if we need, and I don't, but some people always need another reminder, spring training doesn't count. And I would put this in that category because he's just really struggled.
And too, I mean, he's another one who, I mean, he's done it on the World Series stage at the highest level against some of the best pitchers in the world. And I think from a Cubs perspective, it made a ton of sense. I mean, he had multi-year offers. He could have gone somewhere else. He wanted to bet on himself. He wanted to play in Chicago. And from a Cubs perspective, it made sense to let him at least try that. You know, they were able to, while very similar to Kyle Schwarber in terms of overall numbers, they felt there were, you know, elements to his game that maybe translated better for this group. He was cheaper. It was a way to kind of change the conversation too of, you know, not just bringing back the same group to fix a broken offense. So yeah, I mean, with Peterson, you gotta just keep, you know, rolling him out there. They're going to try to find some good matchups and keep guys rotating. But I mean, there's so many guys looking up and down this roster. It was like, you know, more than half of the opening day roster was positioned to become free agents after the season. And you just wonder how long guys can go on like this before they do start pressing just way too much and the season gets away from them.
This is a very telltale stretch of a couple of weeks, because before you face the Pirates on May 7th, you have the Mets series, another Brewers series, and their starting pitching looks good. Then you've got the Braves again, and then you play the Reds, who, at least for the beginning 10, 12 days this season, really looked like they had some offensive firepower. How do you evaluate the Cubs moving through that stretch? I think it's going to tell a lot about this team and where we think those watermarks lie.
No doubt. I mean, they've got I think the Dodgers coming in too in early May. And, you know, if you look at the schedule even beyond that, I mean, June is just brutal in terms of road trips. I think they have like multiple West Coast trips. They go to New York to face the Mets. Yeah, I mean, we're going to find out a lot. And, you know, I don't think after these next couple of stretches, there'll be too much of a doubt about what's going to happen. I think, you know, the Cubs showed us at the end of 2019, the Joe Maddon's lame duck season, of like, you know, it kind of became obvious that change might be good for every party involved in that scenario. And, you know, I do wonder if the kind of clamor for these players that, you know, Cubs fans have kind of watched growing up in Chicago, or this heat that we want to put on, you know, Jed Hoyer, I think, you know, things could become crystal clear sooner rather than later. They just gotta be better. They gotta take it up. There's no way around that.
What does that mean for Nico Horner? And how does the trajectory of this year's team affect his near term future?
Yeah, Dan, that's the story. You know, I'm trying to think of when to time it, but, you know, at a certain point it would be, okay, what do the Cubs have to play for this season and what do they need to find out? And certainly they're on a trajectory right now to where August and September will be about that, like finding out what you have. I think the Cubs have no credibility when it comes to the service time stuff after Chris Bryant's grievance, but I do get what they're saying, and that, you know, Nico Horner was a bad hitter last year. He has not played a single game at the AAA level. I get why they want him to just get some more seasoning. That totally makes sense. But I think it was wrong to look at him as like a savior or like a contact bat who could, you know, diversify this offense. It's probably asking too much from a guy who has, by all accounts, shown a lot of composure and maturity and, you know, high level skills on defense. And so then it becomes, all right, who amongst this pitcher group can they kind of, build around, and, what can they get back if you're trading off, a Crane, Burl, Bryant? How would you package those deals together? Because whatever aisle, GM is shopping in, the Cubs can offer something: starting pitching, bullpen help, all-star playoff proven hitters. And that, at this very early stage is kind of the direction this thing is trending.
Well, great.
Yeah,
we only have like 150 more games, a little less than that to talk about. But I thought Kyle Hendricks said it well. Sometimes you don't want that off day; you just want to get back out and playing, and that's what it is for the Cubs. They just have to go out and do it.
We do. Patrick Mooney, thank you. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, Patrick.
Anytime. Take
care.
Good
to hear from you.
Patrick Mooney of The Athletic. When we come back, some thoughts on the best baseball series nobody ever saw on Bernstein and Rahimi on The Score.
Mully and Hall, Chicago's number one and most listened to sports morning show, period.
Tommy Hottovy, the Cubs pitching coach.
When you're dealing with pitchers coming and going and guys who are on the COVID list, and because of contact tracing, it does complicate measures. And Kyle Hendricks was right in the middle of that. How challenging was that?
It's just about getting back in the routines, getting back in consistency. I think we have 10 in a row coming up after this, so it's going to be a really good stretch for us.
Mully and Hall, mornings 5 to 9 a.m. on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station and Odyssey station. This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
He gets hit. And for Santana and the Dodgers, they're lucky that it hit him. Because if it doesn't, the game's probably over, and that ball's at the backstop. And Amateo and Santana coming together. I know this game's officially had everything.
He didn't hit him on purpose. He just got pumped up and overthrew a fastball.
And Mateo probably realizes that, but felt that fastball and got pumped up himself. And this, their fourth try. Seager gets into a ball. Way back there. It's gone. First pitch of the 12th. A two-run shot from Corey Seager.
Legit bad blood, not this Anthony Rizzo walk-up song mess. He loves everybody.
That is courtesy Spectrum Sports, and the Padres and the Dodgers combined for some pretty spectacular baseball with a lot of star players doing star player things, and unfortunately not a lot of people watched it.
No, because it's on the West Coast and we forget about them, and they play games really late and we get sleepy because we're too busy watching four-hour games here, maybe doubleheaders and whatnot, but my goodness. Do you remember when I joked after the Dodgers signed Bauer and I said the year is 2023 and everybody else in baseball is left to have position players pitch while the NL West has all your pitching talent? Boy, did that come through. Saturday night's game, Clayton Kershaw and Yu Darvish, and they just dueled. It was happiness to my weary pitching heart. It was a 2-0 Petco special. It had a fight. It had an amazing Mookie Betts catch. That Saturday night game was just absolutely amazing. And the Friday night game had a lot of fireworks. Buehler versus Weathers. David Price ends up your winning pitcher. He also had a sacrifice fly in the game. That was a 12-inning special. Padres win the one on Sunday. And that one was Bauer versus Snell dueling. Bauer goes 6 innings strong, gives up 1 earned run, 7 strikeouts. Snell goes 5, shades of Tampa in that one for a small hook for Snell, but still, it was just, it was everything you wanted to see in baseball.
Here's the yin and the yang, as Joe Sheehan puts it. He said it was everything you wanted to see and everything that's bothering you about baseball. Tatis, Machado, Darvish, Kershaw, Betts, Bauer, Snell. This series served to remind us that the best players who have ever played baseball are playing right now. Pitching and hitting and running and fielding at a level we've never seen before. That's not meant to denigrate a long line of great baseball players, but to recognize that in 150 years since various stick and ball games morphed into baseball, the players are always getting better. In this series, however, we also saw the elements of modern baseball that chip away at our enjoyment of those talents. Two low-scoring contests, Saturday and Sunday, ran 3 hours and 12 minutes each. A long time for the type of games that were played. Saturday's game was marred by home plate umpire Tom Hallion, whose creative interpretations of balls and strikes seemed designed to allow him more opportunities to make his demonstrative third strike calls. Allowing umpires to change games the way they can with bad strike zones is an ongoing problem every night in baseball and will hopefully be rectified soon with an automated system. He said it was baseball 2021, this volatile mix of the strange and the sublime.
Yeah, that was a good way of putting it. But it was also really competitive, and it reminded you of the division that was in the absolute arms race this year. And that, we saw that.
That's the point of it. The point of it is to have weekends like this.
Yes. And let's all just open our eyes to what is going on the West Coast, because there is some good baseball being played out there, and I don't want anybody to be taken by surprise again. Baseball as a whole is so East Coast-oriented. And I think that if you want to really appreciate the game right now, that's a place to do it. Here are some of the stats that I found mind-boggling. Maybe some solace for White Sox fans in that Fernando Tatis has 7 errors already this season.
Oof.
And he only went 1-for-13 in that series. What happens if he gets 2 hits in that series?
7 errors?
That's 7 errors this season.
That's more than Adam Eaton.
He had 2 on Friday night.
Wow.
But if you, man, if you thought that you, Darvish, and I will say it over and over again, if you thought that you, Darvish, wasn't going to be that dude, he went toe-to-toe with Clayton Kershaw. That was fabulous. And the Mookie Betts catch? 10% probability. 10. He makes it happen.
We've got transition with Lawrence Holmes coming up in just a couple of minutes on The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Morning Show.
Mully
and Haw here.
We're with you every morning on your way to work, live at 5.
We've got the day's biggest Chicago sports stories to start your day off right.
Mully and Haw, mornings 5 to 9 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. And on your device or smart speaker through the Odyssey app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.